Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, February 19th. We have three bills to hear this morning. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2171 and 2172. Mr. Hollenick.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Both of these bills deal with the concept of carried interest. And in OLS, there's a document called called carried interest. And it contains this chart. And the heart of the policy is this a certain type of income known as carried interest at the federal level that gets treated as capital gains income and so is subject to a lower tax rate. At the federal level, the feds tax capital gains income at 20%. And instead of having this certain kind of income taxed as labor income at the old 39.6% rate, it was taxed at 20%. And what each of these bills does is tries to capture that tax difference for Oregon. 2171 creates an addition to Oregon income equal to the federal tax differential at the federal tax differential. So for example, if there were $100 of this eligible income, then 2171 would create an addition equal to 19.6% of that income, or $19.60. And that 19.6% is the old differential between the top marginal tax rate and the capital gains rate. 2172 takes a different approach and creates a new tax equal to 19.6% of that income. So in some sense, 2172 is a full recapture of that benefit, and 2171 just applies Oregon's normal tax rates to that tax benefit, the federal tax benefit.
Thank you. So do we have a sign-up sheet for the public hearing? I know that Senator Taylor is here. Are there others wishing to testify?
Nobody has signed up.
Okay. Senator Taylor.
Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, members of the committee. I'm Kathleen, Senator for Senate District 21. So I am here today. I brought this measure in the previous session, and for reasons I still do not know, it did not pass. But I'm here again to try to see if we can have a serious conversation about making some adjustments in our tax code. So I'm here today to talk about House Bill 2171 and House Bill 2172, two versions of a similar concept that deal with what is commonly known as the carried interest loophole, a loophole that exists in the federal tax code. These bills seek to hold accountable those who take advantage of that loophole through an increased state level tax. Currently, this loophole allows hedge fund investment managers and private equity investors to declare as carried interest a percentage of their revenue investment fee, which allow them to receive a lower tax rate. This essentially enables these private equity and hedge fund investment managers to pay a substantially lower rate, 20%, instead of approximately 37%, which is simply unfair, in my opinion. I'm going to go ahead and start the discussion about House Bill 2172. This bill will recoup that federal tax advantage as revenue for Oregon by adding a 17.6 tax on capital gains at the state level. By combining the state and federal tax levels, private equity and hedge fund investment managers will in total pay approximately 37% on this income, much closer to the federal tax rate on other income. Preliminary estimates from our LRO office staff indicate that this would bring in approximately $17.8 million in the first biennium and $25.9 million in the second biennium. As an important note, House Bill 2172 was written based on 2017 numbers, which reflected a 39% federal income tax rate. And I'm happy to amend the concept to reflect the current rate, which is approximately 37%, while the state rate continues to be at 9 or 9.9%. This concept requires a 3/5 majority vote. So in my consultation with LC and LRO, I asked about some other ways to address this loophole, and that is where House Bill 2171 comes from. So House Bill 2171 is another concept that seeks a different approach to earn back some of the funds that are not collected due to the carried interest loophole. This bill requires a person paying personal income tax to add to their taxable income the amount of federal tax savings they have received due to their investment services partnership income being treated as net capital gain. That amount would be equivalent to approximately 17% of the carried interest. The bill, as written, again, reflects 2017 tax rates, and I'm happy to adjust the percentages based on our current tax rates. As this is an addition, this does not require a 3/5 majority, according to my conversations with LC and LRO. It also brings in substantially less revenue, closer to $2 million in the first biennium. Again, I'm going to be using Mr. Alanek here to help with any of the technical questions. I am currently the Senate Committee on Workforce, which I chair, is convening, so I've stepped away from that, but they are, it's okay, but I want to be able to be here. This is an important measure to me, and I wanted to see if anybody has any questions.
Representative Reschke.
I was thinking, but thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Taylor, thank you for these two bills. So the carried interest loophole, do you know, you mentioned private fund and hedge fund managers. Do you know anyone else that, quote, takes advantage of this right now? Or those are the only two groups that this would affect?
Well, it's as far as, maybe I should have Mr. Allen answer that, but I don't, it's because it's the way in which you have to be engaged in a certain type of business activity and you're earning your money off of investing somebody else's money. So, but Mr. Allen, can you confirm that, please? Or?
Yeah, and that's the intent of the graph up there. So you have the general, what we're talking about is on the general partner side there. So you have the private equity fund. And you have the limited partners, and that's where the bulk of the investment comes from. But the general partner is the person who kind of manages the investment, and they get paid often in two ways. There's a management fee. Sometimes it's referred to as 2 and 20, a 2% management fee, and the 20% in profits. And that 20% in profits is what gets referred to as the carried interest. So it's usually this kind of just structure.
Okay.
Go ahead. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to follow up on that. That the 2 and 20. I didn't want to get too into the weeds of the financial speak. However, amongst company here, and so it's. I like to think of this as if you had a business and you earned an income from it. This really is to me is no different of a way to earn money. I would truly consider this is a loophole. You're basically getting the money that you are earning and the work that you do, you're getting taxed at the capital gains rate instead of getting taxed at the rate that other people would be taxed for their income. I believe, Mr. Alanek, is it not, I think it's true that in the state of New York, they also removed this loophole. I believe maybe we can have someone look into that, but. I think there. I'm not positive, but I would be curious to see. This is something that benefits a very small number of people, and I think that we are in need of revenue here in our great state of Oregon, and I think it would be an appropriate and fair way to generate additional revenue, in my opinion.
Question?
Yes, Representative.
Could I? Thank you. Thank you for being here. So I wanted to get some clarification about the revenue that is projected to be created. The numbers that you gave were for 2172, that approach. Is that right?
Yes.
So the $25 million over a biennium.
So these are, of course, estimates. Okay.
Right.
And so for 2171, which only requires the majority vote, it starts out for the 1921 biennium at $2 million. And then when you get up to the 2023-25 biennium, it goes to $3 million. That's at 19.6%, okay? It's a little bit less if it's at 17%, but then if we were to go with, and that is a supermajority vote, 3/5 vote, is the 2172, House Bill 2172, then it would be at the 19.6% rate, it would be $20.5 million in this biennium, or upcoming biennium, and then in the 2023-25, it would go up to $30 million. Is that helpful?
Thank you.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't mean to keep you too long. So I just want to clarify my question before is that this wouldn't affect S-corps or C-corps in any way if they invest money?
No.
Because it's really the, as Senator Taylor was describing, it's the labor of the general partner. That's the income. That's in question.
Okay. Thank you.
So I, yes, I, pardon me. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I printed out the chart. I didn't know if we were going to have it on the screen or not. I feel the difference between the previous session and this session is that I feel that this chart, at least I hope it helps to explain what's going on. And again, this is for a very small number of people who I would argue are receiving a nice financial benefit.
So, Senator Taylor, I'm going to reframe the something that you raised, the role of this person who's doing this job. So it seems that we are comparing the income of this person, the hedge fund manager or private fund manager, comparing that role, which is a sort of a CEO or CFO role, to a CEO or CFO of some other company, like either an auto dealership or a manufacturing firm, that both have roles managing the activity of a company. But you're saying that this management activity is taxed at a much lower rate than someone who's managing a different type of activity.
Chair Nathanson, I think I see where you're going with the analogy. I would say it's slightly different because with the hedge fund manager, they're managing other people's money, mm-hmm. and they are receiving a percentage of the profits, and that is their income, and that income is being taxed at a lower rate. They're benefiting from the lower capital gains rate, and not they're not being taxed as regular labor and regular income, the way that most people are taxed. So it's slightly off because it's not, they're not actually managing a business. They're managing someone's money or sum of money.
I get what you're saying, and it seems to me their business is managing someone's money. So that's how I got from A to F or wherever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So any other questions? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Committee, are there any other questions for Mr. Allenack or any discussion on this? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you clarify, are we, as the state of Oregon, taxing this money as capital gains?
Oregon does not have have a differential capital gains rate. All of our income, whether it's wage income or capital income, all goes into the same pot and is taxed at our current rates of, in this case, probably 9% and 9.9%.
Okay, so they're not getting any special treatment on the differentiation between labor or carried interest within the state?
Correct. It's just thrown all into this. When somebody files a return, it'll show up on a different line in the return, but we tax it all at our 5, 7, 9, and 9.9.
Okay.
So there's no special treatment.
So this proposal would be to basically try to recapture some of the money that's not going at the federal level, but it's not about making our own books straight.
Correct.
So
yes.
This is not establishing another tax rate in Oregon for this kind of income, though. That seems like that it is. That's what it is to me.
One of the bills does that. Yeah. The other one does not. It takes two approaches. So let's assume there's $100 of this income, and at the federal level, now the graph that I used and the bills used a 19.6% rate. That's pre-Tax Cut and Jobs Act. That's when the top federal marginal rate was 39.6% and the capital gains rate was 20%. As Senator Taylor was describing, the top rate is now 17%. So that aside, if you have $100 of this income, and the federal tax difference is 19.6% of that. It's $19.60. House Bill 2172 creates a new tax and says that tax is $19.60. House Bill 2171 says that $19.60 is now added to Oregon income and subject to our rates of 9%. That's why the impact differential is a factor of 10.
Right.
between the two.
That's significant.
But one would require a 3/5 and the other would not. But one of those does create a new tax, and that's why the 3/5.
Yep.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So therefore, it's kind of like an add back, basically, is the not 3/5 approach, and I cannot remember which is which. But it's the idea of, you know, the idea that we connect to the federal, so we connect, except in this case, a way we think that you're avoiding tax at the federal level, we're gonna add that back into your taxable income from Oregon.
Kind generally, of? Yes.
Okay.
There.
I'll take kind of.
In terms of the asterisk there is the term add back, in that it's, we're already taxing to Representative Marsh's question, we're not giving any preferential treatment. It's
right.
All about the special treatment
that
at the federal
at the
level.
The federal level that
and
we're trying to account for.
And that's the two, exactly.
Okay.
Is it labor income and is it labor income that should be taxed at one rate or capital gains income taxed at a different rate?
Okay. Gotcha.
Yes.
Go ahead. But in adding it back, I mean, we would essentially be taxing, we're increasing our own, essentially increasing our own tax rate on that piece of income. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say we're taxing it twice, but actually what we're doing is.
I can see that perspective.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion on this topic? I'm closing the public hearing on 2171 and 2172. One more bill for today. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2154.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2154 is it's a measure that's making two changes that are kind of following up on two changes that were made at the federal level in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act relating to two pieces of itemized deductions. So just to step back briefly to give some context, in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that was passed in December of 2017, two of the changes that are touched on in House Bill 2154 was an overall limitation on itemized deductions. It's commonly referred to as the Pease limit on itemized deductions, and that was removed from law, and because of Oregon's connection to the federal definition of taxable income, it made those changes automatically here in Oregon as well to our deductions. So the Pease limitation on itemized deductions went away, or at least temporarily. And then the second change is there was a deduction available related to employee-paid job expenses that are unreimbursed by their employer. And that went away as well. So what House Bill 2154 is doing is it's bringing back in some way the deduction for those unreimbursed employee paid job expenses, and at the same time also bring it back into effect the Pease limitation here in Oregon. So in that way, one is creating or bringing back a deduction, and the other is putting back that limit on itemized deductions. So you have kind of two different ways that it would be expected to impact revenue. One would be reducing the number of deductions, and the other would be expanding it. And because it's working with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, you see the applicability is through tax years 2019 through 2025, which aligns with when the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, these provisions related to the deductions, would expire. So they'd be back in effect at the federal level beginning in 2026. So that's why you see some of the dates set up the way it is in the measure.
Thank you. We have one person signed up to testify, and Ness.
Thank you for Representative Nathan and Vice Chair Representative Marsh and Representative Finley. Good morning. My name is Ann Nessie, and I am testifying on behalf of Sustainable Economies Northwest. I have a growing group of scientists and experts, and I highly applaud you on this
correction
to the tax code that was maybe overlooked last time. I applaud your committee for realizing that those individuals who are in higher income brackets do not need extra deductions when so many Oregonians are struggling to make ends meet. And to be half serious about it, I don't think it would even hurt, and I've been talking to people about this because I testify on sustainability, that it wouldn't even hurt to send them a little note back saying, if you're making this much money, you could be a model for sustainable living. Maybe you should buy an electric car or invest in solar panels. There are a lot of things you could be setting an example for that other people can't because they don't have the funds. And so just send them a little nice note, or maybe even better, put a little box on the 2020 form to say, I would like to donate to a fund that would go into the treasury that then schools could put solar panels on their roofs. And kids would learn about sustainability right there at the school. Many states have sustainability curriculums that could pay for. I just think we really need good examples for people who can afford to give. I've talked to many apartment dwellers that would give 5, 10, even a small amount to be a part of that change. They would feel like they can look up there and say, I contributed to that. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Any other discussion on this bill? Yes, Representative.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question until you had that on this bill. I was actually going to ask, are there, and as somebody who's dived more fully into all the bills that were referred to this committee, there are a variety, it looks like there's quite a variety of bills that try to address at the state level some of the many changes that the CPAs were nice enough to bring forward to us last week. Are there a lot more? Are there a few more? Did we?
Mr. Allenack?
It's an interesting policy discussion to talk about, because I was very struck by, even I felt like I had a pretty good knowledge of what was in that bill, and yet in that presentation last week, I was struck by the number of things that are in there that indeed I think we, that probably deserve a good rigorous policy discussion in this committee about what we want our tax policy to reflect in that and not reflect as part of that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. And the short answer to your question, Rep. Smith-Warner, is probably yes. I mean, there were the timing of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act had passed in late December, and then we had the short session, and there were a couple of big issues that really took all of the energy during the session. But there were 130 or so provisions in that bill. And as we were gearing up for this session, we were trying to take note of that and put those in before the committee and raise them to your attention to see which ones you wanted to deal with or connect to or disconnect from. Basically have a more in-depth discussion of the reconnect. And that's on the personal side as well as the corporate side.
Okay. Thank you. I think that will be a fine thing for us to continue to work through.
The Senate Revenue Committee is hearing some of those bills on reconnect and where to connect. It, currently, it's just in each committee, we're timing things differently.
A little bit different.
Yeah, they're basically talking about a connection point, whether it's federal taxable income or AGI, as well as a rolling reconnect versus static connect. There are two key decision points there.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Representative Finley.
I'm curious about a few things with 2154, Madam Chair. This seems a little vague in some regards of what is the threshold and identification.
The threshold for the PEAS limitation?
The limit itemized deduction of fighters adjusted gross incomes exceeds a threshold.
Mm. I think Kyle has a chart that he can go through and that will elucidate a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. To your point, Rep. Finley, yeah, I did put a background slide in the meeting materials to try to hit on that because, yeah, the terminology isn't quite straightforward. But the general idea and the way you can kind of see the chart there is an individual would have itemized deductions. And then there's this limit that essentially brings those down once you get above the income threshold. And these are pretty high income thresholds. So for someone who's single, The single pilot would be $261,500. So you're not having any itemized deductions reduced until you get above that threshold. And then for each dollar that you are above that threshold, your itemized deductions are reduced essentially by 3 cents on the dollar. So it's that 3%. So if you have $261,501, you've now lost 3 cents worth of your itemized deductions. And it'll bring it down, the way the kind of the blue line works there is to show it'll bring your deductions down potentially to 20%. And that's the floor. So it won't reduce all your itemized deductions completely, but it will take them to 20% of your total. And so in terms of like a hypothetical example for a single filer, if they have 100,000 in itemized deductions, you'd be talking about $3 million in income before they're completely reduced down to 20%. So it does, there is quite a bit of, it does take some time for those deductions to get reduced down to the floor, the 20% floor.
Thank you.
And I'll just ask one more thing to clarify. And this is, I believe the change in the ability to deduct business expenses, one of the main ways I've heard about this playing out in practicality is teachers, for example, who buy supplies for their students unreimbursed, they are no longer able to put those on from their federal tax to deduct them as a business expense. Is that correct? I mean, there's plenty of other things too, to be clear. There's plenty of other businesses and people spend plenty of money for other things. And yet, kind of just anecdotally, what we have heard the most about is specifically teachers not being able to get that taken off their taxes to.
Mm-hmm. Rep. Smith-Warner, yeah, that has been an example that was definitely used on the Senate side as well. And just one note on that is there is a separate above-the-line deduction, so it's a deduction available to all filers, regardless if they itemize, specifically for teachers for classroom expenses. And that one still, it doesn't have a sunset. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act did not touch on that. I believe that one's $250, the max that you can subtract. So that one is in place, but yes, the other miscellaneous could also touch on that example as well. But just so people are aware of that one, the above the line deduction is still available and in place. Yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions? Any other discussion on this bill before I close the public hearing on this bill? I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2154. There's no other business before us. We're adjourned.